Super Tuesday is upon us. Voters in 12 states, asterisk sort of a 13th, Wyoming is weird, also one territory, are heading to the polls today to cast their ballots for the candidate they'd like to see in the White House.
Joining us now to talk about Super Tuesday and what we can expect to see from today's primaries and caucuses is Karen Hoffman. She's a visiting assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. Karen, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. It's an exciting time in politics.
Right, today is pretty exciting, and there's so many states at play today, which is, I guess, kind of unusual because we've been watching one state trickle in after another, Iowa, New Hampshire. Now, boom, 12 at once. Why?
Well, there's all this jockeying for position about who gets to be first in the primaries, and for a while, states kept wanting to move up, you know, sooner in the process so they could have a bigger role. But the parties at some point said, you know, no one except for the very beginning states could stay there, and everyone else had to go later on. So, you know, there's the rule, but everyone still wants to be as soon as they can according to the rules. So hence, March is a very big month. We've been, dissecting each individual primary, and now we're going to have to do a lot at one time. So,
yeah, people who research this, you've got to be ready for data overload come from
tomorrow.
Oh, my
gosh.
Morning, right?
That is for sure.
So what's at stake here? I mean, is this something that generally is expected to be a huge decider, maybe even the decider? Is there often just one candidate left when the dust settles after Super Tuesday?
I have to preface my remarks by saying that this cycle has been anything but typical. So what is typical for a cycle might not be true for this one. However, I do think that there's some people, some candidates who have more at stake tomorrow, perhaps, than other ones. Ted Cruz, originally, I remember months ago when people were talking about how well-positioned he was for Super Tuesday. He's got a great organization in a lot of these states. And yet now Trump has really, you know, stolen some of his thunder. And, you know, he really needs to do awfully well in Texas and even, you know, do fairly well elsewhere. Otherwise, it's hard to see how he can keep competing with Trump going forward.
And what about Bernie Sanders?
Well, you know, he has vowed to stay in this to the convention, so I guess in that sense, it doesn't really matter. However, there's this whole psychological aspect to these primaries, which is the momentum. And while it doesn't actually seem fair to all of us states who have to vote later on, momentum seems to take on a life of its own. And I guess some are concerned for Bernie that if Hillary can really get ahead of steam and start winning a lot of states tomorrow, that the momentum is going to help her even further. And, at some point, you know, people start jumping on a bandwagon. So I guess that's a fear for Bernie. And plus, a lot of these states look better for Hillary Clinton in terms of winning them in the South. So, but I think he's going to stay in. So it's not a question of whether he's going to drop out or not.
One thing that limits the impact of Super Tuesday is that as we go through the primaries, some states are winner-take-all. You win a state like Ohio, I think. John Kasich's hoping to win that because you get all the delegates then.
Right.
Most of these today are proportional representation of some sort. So even if I win this state, the second place finisher might get just a few fewer delegates. So this, even winning in all or most states, might not be a slam dunk win for whoever wins it.
That's absolutely correct. I think after the 15th of March, there are more Republican primaries that are winner take all. The Democratic primaries, pretty much none are winner take all. Although the rules for delegating, you know, or for assigning delegates are incredibly complicated in each state. The thing is, especially in the Republican race where you still have more than two candidates, the challenge is that because each delegate or each candidate is getting delegates, it makes it really hard for any one candidate to get to the halfway mark. And so that can be really frustrating for people. Like even for Donald Trump, as for a front runner, as you point out, he cannot at this point yet just kind of sweep delegates. And he's going to have to keep plugging away because everyone else is still getting them as well. This thing is going to go on for a while yet.
So looking at the GOP field again for a moment, how important is the number two slot tomorrow if Donald Trump, as he's looking likely to at this point, does pretty well, kind of sweeps the first runner spot? Does the number two person then either become sort of the person that the establishment Republican pins their hopes on, and can they that person then make the case that who's ever number three can maybe should drop out so that there can be more consolidation?
Well, that makes perfect sense. Everything you said makes perfect sense, again, except for in this cycle. I did read that Rubio's campaign is trying to downplay expectations a little bit for tomorrow, because that's the thing about number two and number three. It seems so silly. It doesn't necessarily matter where you end up as long as you exceed expectations. So, although clearly winning is best. But there's going to be a lot of jockeying and trying to spin narratives about, you know, where people should end up. And then if a candidate can claim they did a lot better than they were supposed to, then they can say, well, see, I should still be in the race. And as you say, I mean, the Republicans, some are really looking for sort of an establishment-type candidate that they can all rally around. It just seems as though every time we have a primary and we think that exactly what you said is going to happen, it doesn't. You know, there are some people that dropped out, but we're still not quite winnowed down yet. And so I guess I hesitate to predict that that would happen. I mean, if you can spin a second or third place win as sort of a victory, then you're going to move on.
Talking to Karen Hoffman, visiting assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, talking about today's Super Tuesday primaries. 12 states going to the polls today. Wyoming's been in the field on the caucuses for a couple weeks, as I understand it. One territory in there as well. Wisconsin, not one of those states, however, Karen. And is there a sense of injustice for later states who often have exactly one candidate to choose from in each party? And is there still an effort sometimes to nudge forward, maybe try to jump on the Super Tuesday bandwagon?
Well, I mean, I think the parties really try to kind of put the kibosh on more and more people moving up. And yes, to some extent, there is a sense of injustice. And not necessarily just in the order that you are voting, but, you know, some people point to the very early states as being completely unrepresentative of the American electorate. So that, you know, they say, oh, well, there would be other states that you would actually learn something about what the American public thinks instead of, you know, states like Iowa and New Hampshire. However, you know, the status quo is pretty tough to change sometimes because everyone, you know, has something, or a lot of people have something to gain from it. So, you know, I don't anticipate huge changes in this system, even though you are correct. There are some that feel like, okay, it's all over now. Why should I vote?
By one measure that I saw, 20%, only 20% of American adults vote in primaries. Mm-hmm. How does that compare with how many will vote in the general election?
Oh, it will change dramatically. But I think it's important to note it's not just going to change in terms of the number of people who vote, although absolutely more people will vote. It also has to do with sort of the political beliefs of primary voters versus general election voters. And primary voters tend to be, sort of for the Democrats and Republicans, the very consistently sort of conservative Republicans and the very consistently liberal Democrats. So primary voters don't look exactly like general election voters. A general election is really a new ballgame.
And for candidates and their strategy, early on, obviously, they can focus on Iowa or New Hampshire, or maybe hold off till South Carolina. How does it change the game when you've got 12 states at play at once and then some states like Wisconsin that might be crucially important to you or might be a foregone conclusion?
It gets hard. And here's where the candidates who have really been working for months at building local, you know, grassroots organizations, sort of the ground game. This is where those candidates end up sort of getting a benefit from all of that hard work, because you can't, as you point, a candidate can only be in so many places. So, you know, some of these candidates have really spent a lot of time getting field offices opened, you know, getting volunteers on the ground in all of these states. And that really helps when you have so many races happening in one day, because then you have a lot of surrogates going out for you, knocking on doors, making phone calls, and that stuff matters. So
we're talking Super Tuesday right now with Karen Hoffman, assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. And we want to hear from you. What do you think the outcome is going to be today? Which candidate would you like to see come away from Super Tuesday with the most delegates? We're taking your comments on the Central Time Facebook page.
And you can call in now at 800-642-1234. Who are you pulling for our neighbors in Minnesota? What's been the scene at the polls? And for Wisconsinites, how do you feel about being a voter in a state that doesn't go to the polls until well after Super Tuesday? Does it make you feel like your vote doesn't count quite as much? Call in at 800-642-1234. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation about Super Tuesday, and you can join in. Who do you want to see win today, and who would you maybe like to see drop out tomorrow? You going to be up watching these results, or are you going to wait and see what happens tomorrow morning? Well, you can call us at 800-642-1234, or you can give us your take on the Central Time Facebook page.
Karen Hoffman stays with us. She's visiting assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. Karen, I want to talk about home field advantage. We've got Ted Cruz and Texas today, Bernie Sanders in Vermont, Hillary Clinton, it's been a while, but Arkansas, and then coming up later in the month, Kasich in Ohio, Rubio in Florida. Does that that home field advantage actually translate into a benefit? Will it this year because of Donald Trump on the Republican side?
Gosh. Well, I guess you pointed out the one flaw in using the typical scenario. Clearly, it does to some extent. You know, Cruz in Texas, I mean, he's favored to win Texas, and that has no doubt something to do, you know, the fact that he is from Texas. So, you know, home field advantage does matter. Whether or not, you know, that extends any farther, though, is, you know, not terribly clear. Yeah, Bernie Sanders will probably do well. Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll have to see. I'm not sure if Hillary Clinton would do well in Arkansas because of the roots there, or just because the demographics in that state tend to favor her more somewhat. So, but, I mean, once those states are done, then, I mean, it's back to the, you know, the fighting again. So it's only worth so much and not much more.
So looking again at the Republican side of things, if Marco Rubio doesn't prevail in at least one state, maybe not his own, but maybe his own, what happens tomorrow?
That's a good question. It's possible that he might not win a state. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, it sounds as though his campaign team is already trying to get a narrative going that he wasn't expected to really win any of these states. So the fact that if he did come in, you know, a strong second or possibly even third, that shows his that he is getting stronger and, you know, in terms of moving forward. I'm not sure. I mean, he would have won no states if that had happened, you know, up to this point. And it seems like that would be sort of a hard narrative to sell, but I'm pretty sure they're going to try if that's what happens. Well, and then the other thing is, because so many people really would like to have another alternative besides Trump and or Cruz, you know, maybe that would help him in doing that.
We'll go to a caller now. We've got Brad on the line in Wausau. Brad, hi.
Hello.
What do you think?
I'm sorry?
What did you want to say on the air, Brad?
Well, the question I have is, we keep talking about, and not so much on this program but other programs, the negativity of Trump and Cruz and Rubio and so forth, as well as Hillary and Sanders. What I'm really not understanding is why the media is not spending more time accentuating the positives and what these candidates are standing for and fact-checking versus publicizing the name-calling and so forth and so on that goes on. As an example, you have Kasich, who has a tremendous track record. He's done a lot of things, been very, very successful. But he's rarely ever mentioned in terms of plus or minus, in terms of the qualities that he brings to the party.
Brad, thanks a lot for the call. So, Karen, he's saying the media is rewarding bad behavior, in effect, jumping on and reinforcing, we're giving attention to the negative stuff, so we keep getting the negative stuff.
Well, I think partly, although there's not really time here, I think you do have to distinguish between different types of media sources. So perhaps all of them don't do this in the same way. The other interesting thing, though, about negativity, although I would agree with you that we're really kind of dragging awfully, you know, getting awfully low into the gutter these days, is, you know, there are actually scholars who have done research on negativity. And, well, first of all, apparently it is effective. So we can't really expect, you know, campaigns to not do that, even if we would like them not to. And also that people learn things about candidates when there's negativity. Now, again, I do agree, and I can understand. Well, I'm myself frustrated sometimes at listening when all we hear about is, you know, personal comments about appearance, which seems to have really nothing to do with the debate. But unfortunately, we do have this fascination with this stuff. And I guess I would say that sometimes I try to search out some of the non-mainstream media sources to kind of dig into that stuff more deeply. But, I mean, there are a lot of people who like to hear that stuff. And so I think we're going to continue to have it covered. That's unfortunately the answer.
And does that kind of mean that Donald Trump has the advantage here? Because the cameras love him. He's very quotable. And so the majority of coverage has been about Donald Trump for those reasons, in part at least. Are people, the voters, getting their information because that one candidate is so charismatic for the camera?
That's true. It's a real kind of it's a double-edged sword, because to some extent you don't want to reward that kind of behavior. But on the other hand, you know, some of the media sources who have tried to criticize him for this, it almost backfires on them, because his supporters are then very indignant and think that, you know, the media is out to get him. So to some extent, it doesn't even work when they try to, you know, call him out on this. And I think it's just a tough position to be in. But yes, it absolutely favors, I mean, some of the debates, it seems as though everything kind of circulated around Donald Trump, whether or not you were picking on him or he was defending himself. It's hard to know exactly how to deal with that. But people want to hear it, so apparently we're going to continue.
Talking to Karen Hoffman at Marquette University about Super Tuesday and presidential politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. So, Karen, you've mentioned a couple times this is an unusual one. There's a small sample size of presidential races to choose from to begin with.
Right, this is true.
And this one seems weird. I've seen some people say on the Republican side, this isn't just weird. It's maybe some kind of realignment. Donald Trump is reaching Republican voters in a way other Republicans aren't. There may be some kind of split. There may be a change in the demographics of who supports who. Do you think this is that big a deal?
I have thought for the last few cycles that there is this internal struggle going on in the Republican Party. And, you know, you can see that there were many people unhappy when John McCain was running, you know, that he wasn't sufficiently conservative. There were the same people, many of them were very upset when Mitt Romney was the next nominee. And I suspected for some time that at some point going to come to a head, because some of these groups don't fit together well. And, you know, this could be the election that, you know, there's some kind of splintering or there's some kind of realignment or something that, you know, the Republican Party has these disparate elements that really don't get along right now. And at some point, to have, you know, a unified party, they need to. I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen. Is somebody going to leave? You know, are some of the groups going to, you know, change their views a little bit? But yeah, I think that this is pretty significant.
So do you see that all playing out in the next several months? I mean, you already have the Tea Party, which is one sliver that we're talking about. You have more establishment Republicans, and then I'm not sure exactly how you would categorize what Donald Trump represents, maybe dissatisfaction with the government. So what do you think about how this could play out in the different scenarios?
It's a good question, because the thing is, I don't think that Trump maps really well onto one particular group of Republicans. I mean, In terms of, you know, I remember one of the pundits saying that there are two kinds of elections. There are governing elections and there are protest elections. This election is not really about governing. It's all about protest. And there are people on the left, too, more Democrats, who are very frustrated. And, you know, apparently, you know, some of those folks like Trump as well. So, you know, it's unclear exactly where all of his support is coming from, but certainly there are a heck of a lot of people who are unhappy with the way things are. And it's, you know, I really don't see the path of which element becomes the strongest, because Trump seems to bring together a kind of a weird group of people that are all supporting him that don't fit well into their own political party. So I don't know. We're just going to have to see how this all blows up and what happens when the dust settles.
Do you see anything similar on the Democratic side with, you know, kind of a mainstream versus a further left party base split? Or is this something we see often in Democratic politics, not necessarily a realignment there?
Well, I think the Democratic side is a little different. I think there is absolutely, as you say, this frustration, though, with the status quo on the left as well as the right. So to that extent, Trump and Bernie Sanders are tapping into kind of the same emotion. I think one of the differences, and I think that this came out even in South Carolina, Hillary Clinton has been talking about Barack Obama a lot and his policies and about supporting them. And that has actually gone really well for her. Obama's approval rating amongst Democrats is in the neighborhood of like 80%. So I think that, yes, people do want to change from the status quo. The fact that they are still pretty loyal to this president suggests to me that this isn't quite the transformational change or, you know, the realignment that's happening possibly in the Republican Party.
We'll leave it there for now, Karen. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
That's Karen Hoffman. She's visiting professor of political science at Marquette University. She joins us to talk about presidential politics and Super Tuesday.